Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:04 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 24th, and we had a generally positive day on Wall Street, and the Dow Jones finished down about 80 points, but it was down over 200 at one point, and part of the reason for that was because of the negative earnings on Boeing. Obviously, with the 737 MAX still grounded, that has had an impact on earnings. It's not exactly the most consistent trend in the world. Having had that incredibly quick rebound off the lows at the beginning of the year, this whole impact of its planes literally falling out of the sky has completely disrupted any kind of return to a consistent trending pattern that it might once have had. This looks like a top formation, and that's rather important because it is by far the largest constituent of the Dow Jones. And when we look at that index, well, it hasn't really priced in any kind of decline in Boeing. In fact, it has been pushing on to new high ground, having spent most of the last 18 months consolidating. A point that I've been making with the S&P 500 is that it has had three 18-month consolidations over the course of the last decade and is pushing new highs, and that's equally true of the Dow Jones. Quite whether it is going to be able to muster the wherewithal to continue rallying when its largest constituent is subject to is at risk of some selling pressure remains to be seen. Now, when we look at the NASDAQ, well, there was also the news last night that the Department of Justice is investigating some of the large technology companies. But the NASDAQ is pushing on to new high ground. That's being led higher by the Semiconductors Index, and that's a very meaningful upward dynamic we've had this week. Now, there is definitely a short-term overbought condition here, but this has been a very impressive rebound. What I found also rather interesting is that the headlines have been saying, well, Facebook is going to have to pay a $5 billion fine, but it doesn't really equate to more than a slap on the knuckles, that they have not really had any kind of onerous set of regulations imposed upon them. Then with the Department of Justice thinking about antitrust, one would really have to question whether this is anything other than rent-seeking rather than a concerted effort to try and break up some of these companies. I think it is rather arguable when we look at, for example, the kind of business that Amazon has. It's more of an intermediary than anything else, where the majority of sales come from third-party sellers, where the third-party sellers have, to a greater or lesser extent, either adopted an online and retail capacity or simply an online-only capacity, and Amazon being the provider of access to the market. Whether that is an antitrust issue or not, I think will be explored. But the more important point is that Amazon has been the go-to buy the dip share over the course of the last decade. We most certainly had a very large dip at the end of last year. And now the bigger point here is that it has rebounded. So the decision to buy the dip has been vindicated, and generally speaking, when it goes through one of these lengthier consolidations, it rallies by about $500 afterwards. So that is why people are buying Amazon. That's what they think is going to be the reward for buying the dip. And the reason they believe that is because that's what's happened previously. So in order to really question the consistency of the advance, and to question that buy the dip strategy, well, the strategy would have to fail. There's no real evidence of that just yet. Then Google has also paused over the course of the last while. And when we think about Google in terms of its log scale chart, well, Then we're provided with a rhythmic advance. And certainly, this has been a somewhat larger decline and period of ranging in nominal terms, but on a percentage basis, then we still have this staircase step sequence uptrend, although this has been a lengthier period of consolidation. Well, now the question is the $1,000 level going to hold? I rather think that it is likely that it's going to hold, simply because I don't think that the US government has got any particular interest in trying to destroy some of its most successful companies. And I think that is part of the reason why it is still reasonably steady here above the $1,000 level. But I think there are perhaps other interests that people have which are beginning to come to the fore, because this does represent an uncertainty. That's part of the reason, I think, why we have this outperformance of the semiconductors index. But the other important point is that semiconductors generally are a lead indicator. They're highly leveraged to global growth. And if semiconductors are breaking on the upside, well, we have to at least start to think that we're at the trough in terms of global growth. There is another reason why we might be thinking that, and it's because the federal government in the USA has just announced another stimulus. They're going to raise spending by an additional couple of $100 billion. The Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates this month. Then they're going to stop reducing the size of the balance sheet in September. And just by doing that, the normal course of central banking means that they will have to continue to provide additional sources of liquidity just to keep the economy ticking over, and that means that the size of the balance sheet will start to tick higher. They have also very clearly stated that they want to, in terms of their balance sheet management, they want to try and get rid of their mortgage bond holdings. Well, of course, that also means that if they're going to maintain the size of the balance sheet while dispensing with their mortgage holdings as prepayments and as these bonds come up for maturity, it does mean that they're going to just simply be buying treasuries. And that represents a bullish phenomenon for the price, and this continues to represent really quite a consistent downtrend. Having had the rather significant failed break above the 3% level at the end of last year, then, and particularly in view of the very large dynamic of the failure, it remains the base case that we're going to see the yield come back down towards 1.5%. And that could take another 6 or 7 months, but there is nothing on that chart to suggest that this isn't still a consistent downtrend. Well, the Europeans are beginning to wake up to the potential that the USA has had enough of a strong currency. Well, that is now starting to be priced in, that it is increasingly likely Europe is going to have to act. They're going to have to start engaging in quantitative easing once more, and particularly when the Federal Reserve has stops reducing the size of its balance sheet. That brings us up to about September. Well, the euro is right now on the region of the lower side of its range, and it is oversold in the short term, so we may get some steadying, but it is going to have to at least sustain a move above the trend mean to question the downward trajectory here. What this also helps to really shout out is the clear potential for competitive currency devaluation. The adoption of what is effectively modern monetary theory policies by the USA, the increasing of deficits, and most particularly the cross-party support for massive deficit expansion against a background where the Federal Reserve is cutting interest rates and reduce and ending the reduction in the size of its balance sheet, This is modern monetary theory. It's more of a strengthening or a formalization of the US presidential cycle, which has been observed by investors for decades. In the first half of the third year, you generally get a growth scare, and we've definitely had that. Now we're getting the Federal Reserve stepping in to lower interest rates. The incumbent party is priming the pump in advance of the presidential election a little more than 14 months, 15 months from now. And this is, I think, one of the primary points. It's quite simple. Everyone seems to think that modern monetary theory is new, but that's the evidence points to the contrary. It's simply that this process that's been underway for decades is now being formalized, that there is already a clear cooperation between the fiscal and monetary sides of the government, and they are increasingly moving towards easing. Well, the Eurozone is also moving towards easing. Japan never even stopped easing, and China is engaged in a massive fiscal stimulus. So there is the big question, I guess, at the end of last year was, where is the stimulus going to come from? Well, that question has been answered. We know where the stimulus is going to come from because they're all doing it. And what is also increasingly likely is that we're going to start seeing some of the emerging markets starting to cut their interest rates. The Brazilian real has strengthened through the 200-day moving average, but it looks increasingly likely that they are going to be cutting interest rates. Then also there is increasing likelihood that Mexico is going to start cutting its interest rate, and these currencies have been particularly firm over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. When they eventually do start cutting interest rates, well, if that is because of inflation starting to come down, then they may not be punished for it. If, on the other hand, it is deemed that they're trying to stimulate their economies, well, then the currency will take some of the selling pressure. India has already cut interest rates 3 times, but inflationary pressures have been moderating, and the rupee is stronger now than it has been in at least the last few years. Well, there is the clear potential, therefore, that because of the stimulative measures that we're getting from the USA, Europe, Japan, and China, and indeed the UK. What was also particularly interesting in here today was that the pound, sorry, typed, hit the wrong button. The pound has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs. This is the most meaningful rally we've seen in quite some time. That was an incredibly persistent decline following the failed break above 115. It got all the way back down to test the lower side of the range, and this is the first evidence of that trend breaking. Well, that very much highlights the lame duck status of the new Boris Johnson-led government in the UK. They may wish to engage in hardball tactics, either a deal, or a much improved deal, or a commitment to leave, but it's another story entirely whether they're going to be able to push that kind of hard negotiating tactic through Parliament, and that's why the pound is rallying. It may yet require an election to sweep out or sweep in parliamentarians that are willing to, in fact, follow the will of the people. And it is that will of the people question that is still unanswered. But what we are starting to see is that the pound is firming. But the other side of this equation is that the new administration has already got major plans to completely abandon the fiscal austerity that the UK has been implementing, or I guess let's just call it fiscal responsibility, that the UK has been implementing for the last few years. under Theresa May, that had already come under threat with the significant pay rises for NHS workers, but it is going completely out the window now. So that's another major economy that is engaging in fiscal stimulus. Then, of course, we have Australia. And when you start to add all of these together, well, it would be rather difficult to find any major economy where they want to even put up a facade of fiscal probity for the simple reason that nobody wants a strong currency. And it is looking rather likely that what we are likely to see is that Australian interest rates are also going to start to come down. And that's despite the fact that they've been coming down for the last few months already. There is no indication yet that the RBA is done with cutting interest rates. Well, that is acting as a significant tailwind for the Australian stock market, and this is another example of a market that is likely to benefit from lower interest rates. But again, if we think about it in simple terms, what we're already seeing evidence of is competitive currency devaluation. It's simply the fact that every country is already engaged in it that is masking the size of the moves that are underway. And that is why gold is doing better. And the gold price today was up about $7. It is continuing to range in a really quite tight manner above this base formation, but this does look like a first step above the base. And if it continues to hold, and most particularly in an ideal situation, if it continues to hold the $1,350 area, you couldn't ask for better confirmation of a return to medium-term demand dominance. Silver prices have also popped on the upside in here. So we've had the major move yesterday, and it is starting to improve upon that position now, and pushed on to a new recovery high in here today. Well, I think now people are also starting to look at platinum and the fact that it was up $19 today and beginning to firm from the $800 area. I think it is worth highlighting that silver is much less liquid than gold, and the platinum market is much less liquid than silver. It doesn't take an awful lot of money to have a very significant impact on the platinum price. And this is the third major occasion on which it has firmed from the $800 area. It's also worth considering that prices today are a fraction of where they were at the peak back in 2008. I've been very much of the view for the last while that this selling pressure and weakness as a result of the diesel cheating scandal and the fall off in diesel cars and demand has been overstated. And the real potential here is that hydrogen fuel cells are going to become more of a significant part of the automotive market than diesel ever was. If that does in fact manifest itself, well, they require a lot more platinum than diesel cars do. And that would suggest that platinum is representing optionality on that particular prognostication right now, not least because it is again firming from this $80 area. Then, of course, we have the palladium price, and it was up at $20 in here today. This has been a relatively mild consolidation in the region of the upper side, or the all-time peaks, and it has now broken that very short-term sequence of lower rally highs. So what we're definitely seeing with these precious metals is that they are rallying as a direct response to the concerted global effort to devalue currencies. That's also being manifested in the strength of stock markets. It is, generally speaking, stock markets do tend to reflect or to benefit from the efforts to devalue currencies. We've definitely seen that in Europe. We've seen it in the UK. We've seen it on Wall Street. We're seeing it in Australia today. Now, what we're also starting to see is that the kinds of assets that cannot simply be lent into existence are also starting to do better. What is interesting, however, is that the Bitcoin price today was in negative territory. It is, however, continuing to hold this 9,000 level. And the 9,000 level, I think, is a rather important region to hold. It represents the upper side of the underlying range. But it is rather overextended, and the size of this reaction has been larger in nominal terms, although only marginally larger in percentage terms than we've seen previously. And I do believe that the log scale chart is more instructive when looking at these cryptocurrencies. If we are at the point where we have got this competitive environment to try and devalue currencies, cut interest rates, increase the size of the monetary base, well, that is likely to be beneficial for stock markets. It's likely to be beneficial for hard assets, most particularly for the precious metals, because among all the hard assets in the world, they're cheap relative to the highs that we already have in the property markets. What I did find particularly interesting was this graphic in here today, and it was about the fact that cash buyers are walking away from the US market. The reality is that cash buyers have come in two different varieties. One is Chinese buyers, and the other are private equity firms. Well, prices are really very high, and prices are starting to come down on the west coast of the USA. That could potentially be because cash buyers are walking away and they are less of an influence on the market right now. But I think what is also particularly interesting here is that we do need to pay attention to what's going on in China. And I think that's one of the most interesting markets from the perspective of monitoring the interplay between not only the drive to stimulate and also to try and put a trough into global growth, but there's also a geopolitical component. The Chinese market has been steady, but it certainly isn't really going anywhere. The tone of the official commentary about what is going on in Hong Kong suggests that the Communist Party or the Chinese government are hiring thugs to go out and dispel protesters, and that is a major downturn in terms of governance. It really rather does raise the risk premium on China. I think that is by far the big takeaway here. The H share index is firming, and with US easing and the potential for lower interest rates, well, then that should help to stimulate demand for Hong Kong listed shares. We're probably, however, going to be treated to a very volatile environment, and I think China is now more of a trader's environment than an investor's environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.